Trait number 9 is positive self-dimension. And positive self-dimension is, what good does it do to have this great gift called I do it to myself through my little simulation, and me and my robot walk off into the sunset? Adolf Hitler was a master of the first 8 points, except for self-esteem. He knew how to expect, he knew how to direct, he knew how to think, and he was a loser, the biggest in history. At a paper hanger, he was the Führer. He had everything anticipated simulation. But he missed it a mile in self-dimension. Why? He had no spiritual, he had no natural, he had no human. Maybe he had some time perspective, but he lost it all in the end. The biggest loser in history, no dimension as a human being. I'd be remiss in any program if I didn't really come at this dimension. My spiritual dimension is quietly my own. I never tell it from the platform, the only reason being I don't get paid for loving my creation. Understanding that each of you feels differently, slightly from me. My testimony is inside, fierce, strong like a current, but it is my own and my family's. And rather than pontificate and preach it, I would rather set an example in my life, and so would you. So we're quiet. Maybe we should evangelize it, but then I'd rather show it. My spiritual dimension is that I believe in creation. I believe the success instinct is not an accident. I believe the world and a snowflake are perfectly symmetrical. I believe there's life on other planets. I believe the Milky Way is so vast that there are Milky Ways that I have never seen. I don't understand it in all, but I believe it is unfolding as it should be, that constantly it's overall, but the daily life is intermittent and changing. I have my spiritual dimension, and it drives me. It drives me quietly to help other people. My natural dimension is a little different. I believe in cause and effect and in the natural great laws of nature. And I look to the animals for my cue. I have a poem I wrote because it reminds me of the animals, and it goes like this. I have a thing with animals that goes beyond some human love or understanding. Maybe it's because animals kill only in self-defense or when they're hungry. Maybe it's because they don't have freeways or cars, or maybe it's because my golden retriever brought me the morning paper from puppyhood without being taught until the night I buried him. He was run over by the newsboy's pickup truck. Every time I go to the zoo, I get sad. The magnificent gorilla that would have welcomed scrimmage with the Aussie football team. Even if I let the cheetah out, she could scarcely run half speed from pacing in the chain link cube that once was open plain. Better get a long look at the polar bear begging for a piece of bread. Soon he'll join the Hall of Fame of the extinct, along with his Arctic brothers, gray whale and the crane, and maybe cows and chickens, dogs and cats. Someday a group of wise men will deduce and calculate that what befell the animals may well be human fate. Pass in review, first Tyrannosaurus rex, and then the eagle and the condor, maybe platypus and kangaroo and koala. Someday, if we're not careful, we may see in some museum a tape display that lights up when you press the rail, complete with recorded spiel on how the day when man and woman roamed the planet Earth with their beloved friends, the animals. I look at nature and I marvel at the ecological sensitive balance, the delicateness. I believe in mining, and I believe in energy, and I believe in your beautiful coastline, and somehow my dimension comes to terms with those. My human perspective is beyond myself. And of all the things I'd like to get across today, it's this. If you're a real winner, your wife, your husband, your children, your parents, your friends, your clients, your peers will say to you, they will say it, and you'll hear it. I've only recently heard it for the first time in my life. I like me best when I'm with you. You allow me to be all I can be, and because you allow me to be all I can be, I love myself best in your company. I don't know what it is about you, but every time you come, I like me best. Please stay by me. You allow me to be so free in all I can be. And then you say to them, I'll make you glad you stayed with me. I'll make you glad you talked with me today. I'll give you all the value I can. That's the double win. If you win, I win. If I help you win, I win. The human dimension of the inner circle, the family, the company, the team, the city, the nation. And then the last dimension of all that I've got to watch, I've got to really watch it now, it's the dimension of time. Here's the thief. Horace Mann said it the best. Lost. One 24-hour, 24-karat golden day. Each hour studded with 60 diamond minutes. Each minute with 60 ruby seconds. Don't bother to look for it. It's lost forever. That wonderful golden day I lost today. The zillions of minutes making up the championship play, and everyone looks for the grand final at the end. The answer to the riddle is this. It's the zillions of minutes that make up the life, not the grand final, that counts. The payoff isn't there in the victory. The payoff is in the experience. I'm not talking about the big picture. I'm talking about the goals in life. The winners I know never put happiness on layaway. They live in the now, but they live in the now with dimension. They plant a shade tree under which they know they'll never sit. They set goals just out of reach, but not out of sight in the future. They don't look back, because you're senile if you do, but they look back at their memories and they don't make mistakes again. They profit from the past, guarding their memories. How precious. They look in the future, but just out of reach. They don't live there like Walter Mitty on Someday Isle. And then they live in the now, but not on their bank card. They set their goals and live in the only moment of time over which you have any control, now and it's gone, now and it's time to leave, now and it's history. I believe that a sense of nowness and a sense of urgency is the way the winners live. Looking back for a cue from experience, looking forward to pull you, but living now, and now, and now. I'm not going to put into the future. I'm not going to procrastinate my success. I'm not afraid of my success. I fail every day. I'm not afraid of failure. It's easy to fail. It's so comfortable here. You and I are dimensional human beings, total people. We blow the balloon of life up with the pressure evenly distributed. Let me show you one last slide of that dimension. The last slide, you've seen it before, is called the wheel. And the wheel is the way you set your goals and live your dimension. The wheel is maybe the spiritual end. In fact, I'd be criticized if I wouldn't have put the spiritual end in the center. The spiritual end could be the big total picture, the whole spoke or hub of the wheel. But wherever you place it, make sure you place it so that it rolls on the ground first. The spiritual overview, where you're coming from, and your creation. If that is in tune, and if it is set, then your physical dimension follows easily, and you set your goals. Your body is a kingdom. Your body is a rolls. It is a magnificent Apollo spacecraft to fly you through this magnificent world. Who do you keep healthy for? Your family. Why? So you can continue to play with them. When children grow up, they get old. Your family is to cherish and to play and to love, so you keep healthy for them. Who do you work for? I make money for my family. It's a library card to experience. It's a plane ticket. Money beyond the food is simply an experience. That's all it can give you. How do you make your money? Professionally. Is that what you do professionally? No, but I get some money for doing it well, and that feeds back to my family. But that's not why I work. Well, why do you work? I work to give community value and support. I like to give and create the double win so people say I like me best when I'm with you. All right. How do you give your community support? I give it through my superior mental attitude and my learning. Well, what is it toward? Toward social betterment, to make society a better place. Well, how do you know you're doing that? Because I have spiritual values, and round you go around the wheel in self-dimension, blowing your balloon of life up with the pressure, not in one point. I used to make a lot of money, but my children hated me. I thought I had a lease option on them. I don't even rent them. I used to work all the time trying to make some money. I think professional, I spelled it wrong. Interesting, isn't it, how I low-load myself. I spelled my own, maybe I ought to get more professional. We got the wheel. You and I have it. We're more total people. We're blowing it up more evenly distributed. We aren't a scout troop. We aren't a man that has a scout troop with merit badges while his children steal car radios. We put our own children in our scout troop, and we spend time with them. The total wheel, self-dimension, the total person.
Please fast forward the tape to the end and turn over for side two.
Trait number 10 in the psychology of winning is positive self-projection. Positive self-projection is the way you communicate or project these 9 other traits as a total person. Empathy, of course, is the best way of projecting because it's listening. An empathic person isn't necessarily sympathetic, but sympathy comes in dimension and in self-esteem and love. Empathy is a way of communication by walking in the Indian's moccasins for a mile as if you were the Indian. The way I learned how to project myself best was asking questions. That's the way you sell. I asked myself the question, how would I like a father like me if I were my son? How would I like a husband like me, a wife like me, a mother like me? How would I like a salesman like me, a manager like me? How would I like me if I were them? And I began to practice empathy, the ability to feel with and not just feel for. And then I took 100% responsibility for listening to what people were trying to say. And it was tough because I had to listen to the total person. I listened to the body language. I listened to the tone. And then I said to them, in feedback, would you please give me an example? Would you put it in other words? Would you mind repeating that? Would you put it in some other phrase and tell me more about you? Let me hear you. And I listen for their needs and I give them what they want. But I take 100% responsibility for listening to what they're trying to say. And then once again, I take 100% responsibility for sending. Now, wait a minute. I told my wife I'd meet her halfway. And we never made it. Now I tell her, I'll meet you 100% of the way by listening to you. And then once I think I know what you're trying to say, then I'll tell you what I'm trying to say. And as I tell you, let me put it in other words for you. Let me give you an example. How do you understand what I just said? Over. You know what I used to do when I taught children? Are there any questions, I said? And no one ever asked any. Now I say, let me know how you understand what I said. Would you mind playing that back and repeating it for me? And I have found that people, in their unique wavelength and filter, don't have any concept of what my words mean. They mean only something according to their filter. So I take 100% responsibility as a listener and a sender in self-projection. But most of all, I practice the example of winning. And here's what I'm trying to learn how to practice. Self-projection. Self-awareness. I see the abundance. I'm more flexible now. I take problems into opportunities. I realize that a crisis is a dangerous opportunity. I see the environmental abundance. I take care of my body more. It's a rose. My mind, I listen to cassettes, I read books, I get a book digest, I read the Wall Street Journal, I read professional publications, I don't read junk newspapers. Why? There's enough bad news. I like to concentrate on what's going right. I wake up to music, I congregate with winners, and I listen to other people, but I'm aware of the abundance. My self-esteem, how do I project it? I'll give you my hand first. I'll introduce my first and last name to you. I'll look you in the eye. I'll wear my best, not always the newest, but I'll wear the best I've got. I'll celebrate myself to you. I'll lead with the best of what I've got. My resume's always an original. I never give you a Xerox copy, not of my experience. I realize it's just a tease. And when you ask me or tell me something about myself, I'll take it with a thank you. I won't make klutzy remarks, and I'll use the best affirmative language. That's the example of self-talk, self-esteem. My control, I take the credit of the blame for me. I'm responsible for causing my effects. I pat myself on the back for being who I set out to be. I practice biofeedback. I don't get upset anymore. I'm not angry. Why? No one will kill me. If they do, I'll get upset before they kill me. My motivations are in the direction of my dominant thoughts. My motivation is toward the reward of success, not away from the penalty of failure. The strangest secret is I become what I think about most. I control my motives. My image, my self-image, is a little robot. I know he is. I know she is. I know that I've got to get to him in my car or when I fall asleep. I know I need to relax and put new data on. But I know it's imagined, and I know that he doesn't know the difference between something that is vivid and something that is real. It's all an imagined experience. What do I put in? Numbers, words, and pictures of specificity. The way I project self-direction is by having a game plan, and I've got one for my life finally. My book is a chapter and a page at a time. Purpose. You can ask me what it is, and I'll tell you. I'm thinking about it much of the time. I project my self-discipline by being a simulator. I fly a Link trainer around every day, and I fly in advance so that I won't get scared when I go into a spin. I've thought that out before. I think about what could happen wrong just so I'll anticipate it by thinking what's right, anticipating the correction to the possible danger. My dimension is full and time-oriented. I'm not so foolish to think I'm immortal in the body. I'm immortal in the spirit, but I'm going to be happy now, and I'm going to live in the now.
My self-projection is that of a winner because it goes full circle. If you're aware of the abundance, then you should project the feeling and you become what you think of most. I'd like to leave you in this last few minutes with one story and two poems guaranteed to be 7 minutes long. And here's what they are. The first is a story about Australia. And it's one that I think you, if you haven't heard it, you really should hear it, because it's the basis of the whole psychology of winning. It's a story that could have started in West Australia. In fact, I was here on the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th of July last year. In fact, I was here when Skylabs came to its fiery end, and when Skylabs streaked across the West Australia sky like the Aurora Borealis. Half the people said, "Great Lord, it could fall on us and kill us all." And they said, "Danger in West Australia, Skylabs, pieces to fall on us. Henny Penny, Ducky Lucky, sky is falling." Why wouldn't they make it fall on New York? Why did they not think of it in advance, the pessimist said. Good Lord, it could cause a great problem. Why didn't they anticipate it? And then the others said, like you and I, "You think a piece of it could fall in my yard on my farm? Understand you get $10,000 if you get it to a San Francisco radio station in time. Gee, I'd like to get a piece of that for history. I hope it falls in my yard close to me so I can see it," the optimist said. There's a young Australian boy in Queensland. His name is Brett Livingston Strong. At age 9, his father died in a water skiing accident, and he was left with the memory of a father, a wonderful mother, and an artist's palette. He began to paint and sculpt. They discouraged him. He used a tombstone that couldn't be carved, so he carved the figure of a woman and won a $40,000 prize with a little pick. And then he painted the picture of an Aborigine looking at the Sydney Opera House in 1973, when it had just been built and dedicated. And then, as the Queen saw it and said how nice, Brett Livingston Strong came to the United States with a dream to be a sculptor, a painter, a young Australian boy seeking out so he could come home in glory rather than unknown for his unusual way. He came to Los Angeles and sat in a hotel room and saw the story unfold. And very quickly it's this. In Malibu, California, there is a big rock hanging over the highway called the Malibu Rock. 161 tons, 1 million years old. It's your basic big rock, just hanging over the highway, looking out the water, minding its own business. But we're in the 1980s. I mean, this is 1979. Things are tough. The homeowners look up. It had been raining that day, last Valentine's Day. The homeowners looked up, pessimistic as they were, subject to inflation, recession, and the Ayatollah. They looked up and said, "My God, it will surely crush us. 161 tons of menace, the Malibu Rock." What did they do? They sued the state of California because they didn't want them to hold responsible if they didn't bring it down. The Iranian export company owned the rock and the property. They weren't about to move it, and they didn't. And so the rock stayed, but the fear of Henny Penny Ducky Lucky, Skylabs, sky is falling. They sued California, a class action suit. Governor Brown sent the team down, hard hats. What did they do? Dynamite, steel cable, $72,000 of steel, 4 Caterpillar Deeser tractors, 1 Sikorsky jet helicopter, 7,000 pounds an hour of water rolling in, dynamite blowing up, the rock wouldn't budge. Superman came down and got a hernia. Well, we had promotions there, and they put it on television. He rocked around the clock, and it went for 3 days. The $92,000 turned into $1 million. It cost $1 million to bring her down. And they brought her down the Malibu Rock, and she crashed down to the pavement. And the homeowners got their wish. The rest of the mountain slid down on top of it, been holding the mountain up for a million years. It cost me $1 million of my taxpayers' money. They got their wish, and Brett Levinson Strong, the Australian, looked on his TV set and he said, I must have that rock. That is the most beautiful rock I've ever seen. Why, it's a pod unfolding. That is unfolding like my painting of Australia with the Aborigine looking up at the opera house. I must have that rock. It reminds me of a man. I've got to have it. He went down and bought it for $100. Sitting in the middle of the highway, you should have seen the hard hat. Look at this guy with the funny accent. He wants to buy it for $100, sell it in the Santa Monica Pier for $50. They bought 10 cases of Coors and watched him. Oh, they said, by the way, you've got to get it off the highway in 36 hours. It'll cost him $30,000. It did. Cost him $30,000. How do you get $30,000? A class action suit? Heck no, that cost you $1 million. For $30,000, he went to the merchants in Century City. He said, I got this great, fantastic idea. You know that rock that's been on television that'll give your place national exposure? He said, it's better than your pet rock. It's been on every TV station. I just bought it for $100. They said, you did? Could you bring it to our store and do something that could bring the people in? He said, no, I'm not going to bring people in. I'm going to do something for it if you'll help me move it. I don't want to bring people in. I'm not a promoter. I just want to carve it. He got a pneumatic jackhammer, rented it. 3 months, 17 hours a day, took a snapshot and worked. His magnificent obsession. The Malibu Menace had turned into a masterpiece. 3 months, 17 hours a day, he unveiled it. And who came down to see it? The man for whom he had intended it from the UCLA Medical Center. 6'5", 70-something years old, a little slow, didn't have his cowboy hat on. He said, I like it. How come you did it? He said, well, Duke, Mr. Wayne, I just thought it reminded me of you, kind of tough to bring down and craggy. I don't know why I did it. It was just something that I saw people trying to tear it or bring it down, and you remind me of the tough old cowboy institution. A lot of, maybe America, you remind me of. John Wayne said, well, thank you very much. How did Livingston Strong know he wouldn't make it? How did he know that that rock would have significance? How did he know that a promoter would look at it differently? And the promoter would put it in Grauman's Chinese, in Mann's Chinese Theater, that the people would file by and see how beautiful, how perfect the figure was. How did he know the promoter would give him $100,000 a year for 10 years or $1 million cash, whichever he wanted, for the rock? He took the $100,000 a year for 10 years plus some paintings and drove a 450 SL away. And I said to Brett Livingston Strong, you want to do mine next? And he said, your nose is too big. And I said, as I saw his mother in Queensland near Brisbane last year, has he always been like this? And she said, unshakable, unstoppable, unmitigatable, incurably optimistic, always a dreamer, always trying to turn stones into people. And I said, how funny. Isn't it ironic that it cost me $1 million for them to bring down to get their wish? He got $1 million for just making a cowboy's picture who people are filing by. The uncanny thing is the rock's going back up on the hill where it came from. Only in the J. Paul Getty Museum of Fine Art, just a mile down the road. The winners look at a rock as a masterpiece. The losers look at it as a menace. And the spectators keep on driving, never paying any attention on their way home to watch TV. The psychology of winning is that way. And this Australian taught me more about life than I have learned in a long time. In closing, let me just say this. For women here, and there are several in the audience, and more each day, and more in business, and more in professional life, a woman taught Frank Borman how to fly, and now he's president of Eastern Airlines and orbited the moon and stepped on it. A woman led Israel. A woman leads Great Britain. Women are selling Xerox and IBM. I've never seen anything like it. The next thing I know, there'll be a woman Blue Angel. And now there are women Charlie's Angels, so I don't know which. But if you're a woman and you're worried about your place, let me say this. When you look in the mirror, you might say, and I know you will, mirror, mirror on my wall, what's the meaning of it all? Is there something more to life than to be his loving wife? Yes, I love my children dearly. They'll grow up and come by yearly. Dare I yearn for something more than to cook and wax the floor? What about the needs I feel? Are my dreams considered real? What about an education? A voice to shape the nation? I'm not angry or rebelling, but there's something strong, compelling. Is our destined heritage a two-fold color page, a Playboy magazine, a sexy pinup queen? I've got a body and a soul. I've got a mind. I've got a goal. I'd like to learn. I'd like to teach. Maybe earn. Always reach. I'd like to fly from my cocoon and place my footsteps on the moon. The world's a better place with my special female grace. I don't want to be a man. I love the woman that I am. I can give the world so much with my special feminine touch. But mirror, mirror on my wall, help me help him hear my call. All I've ever hoped to be is free, to be that person, me. And for every man here, as we go on out and hit him and round him up and go for the mark, I'm a Marlboro man. I hope we beat the other team. I'm a rugby man. I'm a Super Bowl man. I'm a grand final man. But I'm a crystal baller. Big boys don't cry, but I get smoke in my eyes when I get sad. I wonder what it is that makes me sensitive. Crystal ball, oh crystal ball, will this empire rise and fall like the Roman legions must, ash to ash and dust to dust? Is there something more to life than to build it for my wife, give our children more than their parents had before? I go to work, I earn my bread, I watch TV, and I go to bed. Sunrise, sunset, year to year, before I knew it, winter's here. It's not a scrimmage or practice game. There's no Martyrs Hall of Fame. Time the speedster takes his toll. Every day's the grand final, my Super Bowl. Losers live in classic style, that never world called Someday Isle. They blame bad luck each time they lose and hide with sickness, drugs, and booze. Losing's a habit, so is winning. If I change, I'll start beginning. I'll live each day as if my last, not in the future, not in the past. I'll dream it now. I'll plan it now. I'll want it now. I'll do it now. I'll close my eyes and truly see the person I'd most like to be. I think I can. I know I can become my greatest coach and fan. I love myself, but I'll give away all the love I have today. I think I can. I know I can become my most uncommon man. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
As usual, time the thief and my eternal love for the sound of my own voice has taken us over. As we leave today, I'll say this. God bless Australia. God bless the people. The humor, the response, the openness, the coastline, the resources, the technology, the fierce independence, the ecology, and the welcoming hand that makes an American look ahead and look back and say, I hope they don't find out what you got. Because of all the things you've got the people. And I'll tell you, that's where the action is. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.